You're listening to the Delta Quadrant, a Star Trek Voyager podcast. Today we're going to be reviewing The Caretaker. So Benji, why don't you go ahead and give us a brief synopsis of The Caretaker.
Janeway leads a starship Voyager on a mission to find Tuvok, her Vulcan tactical officer. He has been on an undercover assignment to infiltrate the Maquis group led by former Starfleet officer Chakotay. Their ship has been reported missing in the Badlands. Janeway has enlisted the aid of Tom Paris, a Starfleet prisoner and former Maquis, to guide Voyager through the Badlands. However, the starship suffers the same fate as Chakotay's ship. It is struck by an unknown energy beam that sends it traveling deep into the Delta Quadrant. Far from home, both Janeway's and Chakotay's crews are subjected to experimentation by a non-humanoid lifeform known as the Caretaker, who is searching for a way to help the devastated Ocampo world. The trip to the Delta Quadrant kills a number of both ships' crews, making it natural for the crews to combine. Janeway must decide between using the Caretaker's failing equipment to send them all home or protecting the Ocampo from their enemies. She takes the moral high road. Janeway, Chakotay, and their united crew begin taking the slow route back to the Alpha Quadrant. The teleplay is by Michael Piller and Jerry Taylor, story by Rick Berman and Michael Piller and Jerry Taylor, directed by Winrick Colby. Our guest stars include Basil Langton as the Caretaker slash Banjo Man, Gavin O'Hearley as Javen, Angela Patton as Aunt Ada, and Armin Shimmerman as Quark.
All right, and on Geos, this has a current rating of 8.5 out of 10. All right, so let's get into our episode review and discussion. Caretaker opens with a brief little prologue, which I will read to you. Unhappy with the new treaty, Federation colonists along the Cardassian border have banded together, calling themselves the Maquis. They continue to fight the Cardassians. Some consider them heroes, but to the government of the Federation and Cardassia, they are outlaws. So just like DS9's pilot, it has a little prologue opening text to introduce us to the new show. With dramatic music playing in the background, of course.
Yes, very
so,
dramatic, actually.
Yeah, our teaser opens up, and right away we're thrown into some action. Maquis ships being chased by a Cardassian warship. And on this Maquis ship, we find what's going to be three of our main characters, Chakotay, Torres, and Tuvok, being chased in the Badlands in some kind of plasma field. Voyager, yes. Star Trek loves those plasma fields. As that teaser ends, we're kind of thrown into a kind of a white light. I think they're hit by some kind of energy wave, some kind of nondescript energy wave that Star Trek is also really good at. Then we go into our credits. And as this is our first episode, what were your thoughts on the opening theme and credit sequence for Voyager?
Well, honestly, I love the opening credits to Voyager. I think it was really a good move. I think it was really interesting because up to this point, you've had the opening credits to the original series and Next Generation and DS9, and pretty much all three of those opening credits are very basic. They're very simple. The first two are the ship just flying around back and forth, and then DS9's was just panning shots of a really ugly looking space station that you really know nothing about yet. So this theme had a lot more elaborate music, and it was very colorful, had a lot of things going on in it, and it looked really good. And I love that it opens up with some action right away, and it really gets you intrigued into who these characters are going to be about. And at this time in the Star Trek story, the Maquis are something that we're pretty interested in to begin with. You know, because this storyline began, you know, in the final season of Next Generation and went into DS9 and back to Next Generation again. And so I thought it was pretty cool that they used the Maquis for a very large portion of Voyager. And so I really enjoyed this episode. It's definitely was one of the more exciting pilots, I feel. And I think that they did a great job with the opening teaser and also the opening credits. So I was very impressed with it.
All right, cool. Well, after the credits, we're taken immediately to somewhere else, to a penal colony in New Zealand. And this is where we meet Mr. Paris, Tom Paris. Yeah.
Nicholas Locarno.
That's right, yeah. He also played Nicholas Locarno. And I remember hearing somewhere that they had considered actually using that character of Locarno.
Yes, honestly, I kind of wish they had. I don't know why they chose to use the same actor but create a different character, but I always thought that would have been really interesting having made him the same character.
Yeah, I thought that would have been interesting as well. It would kind of remind me of an episode of TNG, Lower Decks, where they brought back Cadet Seto.
Yes, that was a very good episode, actually.
Excellent episode, but it kind of been the same kind of thing. I thought it would have been nice to have a character that maybe would have had a chance to redeem himself as Cadet Seto did. But let's get back to the episode here. Janeway is trying to recruit Mr. Paris.
Tom Paris? Catherine Janeway. I served with your father on the Albatani. I wonder if we could go somewhere and talk.
About what?
About a job we'd like you to do for us.
I'm already doing a job for the Federation.
I've been told the Rehab Commission is very pleased with your work. They've given me their approval to discuss this matter with you.
Well, then I guess I'm yours.
I'm leaving on a mission to find a Maquis ship that disappeared in the Badlands a week ago.
I wouldn't if I were you.
Really?
I've never seen a Federation starship that could maneuver through the plasma storms.
You've never seen Voyager. We'd like you to come along.
You'd like me to lead you to my former colleagues. I was only with the Maquis a few weeks before I was captured, Captain. I don't know where most of their hiding places are.
You know the territory better than anyone we've got.
What's so important about this particular Maquis ship?
My chief of security was on board, undercover. He was supposed to report in twice during the last 6 days. He didn't.
Maybe it's just your chief of security who's disappeared.
Maybe. That ship was under the command of another former Starfleet officer named Chakotay. I understand you knew him.
That's right.
The two of you didn't get along too well, I'm told.
Chakotay will tell you he left Starfleet on principle to defend his home colony from the Cardassians. I, on the other hand, was forced to resign. He considered me a mercenary, willing to fight for anyone who'd pay my bar bills. Trouble is, he was right. I have no problem helping you track down my friends in the Maquis, Captain. All I need to know from you is what's in it for me.
You help us find that ship, we help you at your next outmate review.
Uh-huh.
Officially, you'd be a Starfleet observer during the mission.
Observer? Oh, hell, I'm the best pilot you could have.
You'll be an observer. When it's over, you're cut loose.
Story of my life.
What were your thoughts on Janeway right from the get-go?
Right from the get-go, I really like her. She seems like the type of captain that, just right off the bat, she seems like she's one who is very direct, but not completely formal, and we see this in one of the later scenes of the episode with Mr. Kim referring to her as sir, where she says, despite Starfleet protocols, I don't like being called sir.
Yeah, I'll take it in the crunch, but yeah.
Yes, it's not crunch time yet, Mr. Kim, I'll let you know when. I really like her. She seems like she's still, I guess I mean more Kate Mulgrew at this point, and I think that this is true of pretty much most of the actors in any of the pilots and first seasons of Trek, but at this point she seems like she's still trying to kind of figure out the role a little bit, I guess, and I don't mean that in a bad way by any means, it's just later on in the series you can see that she's a little more comfortable with it, but even still I think that the acting was very well done in this episode, and at this point, I think that we'd be really intrigued to get to know her character a little bit more and see what all she's really about. She seems like she definitely believes in Starfleet protocol, but isn't quite as strict about it as, say, Captain Picard would be. She seems like she might be a little bit a little bit more like Sisko's in the sense of sometimes seeing some shades of gray from time to time.
Mm-hmm.
So she's an interesting character. I like her.
I like her a lot. And did you know, I don't know if you're aware of this, you probably are, that she was not the first choice and actually did some taping with another actress, a French actress.
Yes, they filmed part of the pilot, so actually Kate Mulgrew was the final actress to be cast for Voyager. And actually, I've seen some of the clips of Caretaker that they did film with the other actress, and it was just appalling.
I'm so grateful that
they got Kate Mulgrew in.
Yeah, you know, I wouldn't. I don't know about appalling, but it's odd because, you know, we're so used to Kate Mulgrew. It's kind of like, you know, how we felt about maybe Michael Keaton playing Batman. We were so thrown off when Val Kilmer is going to play Batman. Come on, this isn't right. You know, we got used to Kate Mulgrew. So by the time we saw those clips of this other actress,
I guess that's true.
Yeah, it kind of throws us off. And those clips are on YouTube, as far as I know. That's where I saw them. They're also on the disc of the Voyager box set.
Yeah, I most likely saw them in the special features on the DVD, most likely.
Yeah, definitely very interesting to look at. But, all right, let's move on. So she's recruited Mr. Paris to help her. She's taken him out of the penal colony. And right away we go to DS9. We're passing off the torch just like TNG did for DS9 in their pilot. And we get a nice little beauty pass of Voyager docked at Deep Space Nine. It's pretty cool. It's a cool looking ship. We get to see it for the first time.
I love Paris's scene with the Betazoid pilot. I found it very amusing, the whole, do you always fly at women at warp speed, Mr. Paris? I love that line.
You're changing my mind about Betazoids.
Good.
Oh, that wasn't a compliment. Until today, I always considered your people warm and sensual.
I can be warm and sensual.
Just not to me.
Do you always fly at women at warp speed, Mr. Paris?
Only when they're in visual range.
That's our ship. That's Voyager. Intrepid class. Sustainable cruise velocity of warp factor 9.975. 15 decks. Crew complement of 141. Bioneural circuitry.
Bioneural?
Some of the traditional circuitry has been replaced by gel packs that contain bioneural cells. They organize information more efficiently, speed up response time.
All right, so we go from there to Quark's bar. And Quark is trying to swindle another one of our main characters, Ensign Kim, played by Garrett Wang. Ensign Kim is pretty green, as we're going to find out in this episode, you could say. But Tom Paris comes to the rescue.
Yes. I love Quark in the scene. I mean, just the way he acts, like, so offended that Harry's going and saying that he was warned about Ferengi at the Academy, and it's just hilarious how Quark goes and throws this huge hissy fit, and he finally, Kim finally says, oh no, I'll take some of these crystals, these make good, some kind of something for his mother, and Quark says, are cufflinks for your father? He's like, cufflinks, that's great. I love his attitude when he finally gives in and says, cash or credit. I'm thinking, they don't use cash, they use latinum. I always thought that line was funny.
Tom ends up going to the mess hall, what will be called the mess hall of Voyager. This is where we're going to learn a little bit about Tom's, a little bit more about Tom's backstory. As he walks in, you'll see that the first officer, the doctor, the current doctor, not the hologram yet, actually gives him kind of a... evil eye, like, ooh, I don't like you. Something happened in their past. So Tom sits down, he and Kim talk.
Is it true? Was the accident my fault? Yes. Pilot error. But it took me a while to admit it. 14 varieties and they can't even get plain tomato soup right. They said you falsified reports. That's right. Why? What's the difference? I lied. But then you came forward and you admitted that it was your fault? I'll tell you the truth, Harry. All I had to do was keep my mouth shut and I was home free. But I couldn't. The ghosts of those three dead officers came to me in the middle of the night and taught me the true meaning of Christmas. So I confessed. Worst mistake I ever made, but not my last. After they cashiered me out of Starfleet, I went out looking for a fight and found the Maquis. And on my first assignment, I was caught.
It must have been especially tough for you, being the son of an admiral.
Frankly, I think it was tougher on my father than it was on me.
Look, I know those guys told you to stay away from me, and you know what? You ought to listen to them. I'm not exactly a good luck charm. I don't need anyone to choose my friends for me.
And the first officer, or is it the doctor, I can't remember, is really kind of a jerk, I thought.
Yeah, he is. And actually, I don't know if you noticed this, but I usually always notice actors who have played previous characters before. I just thought it might be worth mentioning that the actor that is playing the original Doctor on Voyager is actually the criminal who was in the Next Generation's third season episode, The Hunted. He was the same guy that they were
Roga.
Firing the phase at in the transporter room.
Oh, yeah, Roga Daynar.
Yes, Roga Daynar. I thought that it was interesting that he was on Voyager because, you know, he was a jerk in Next Generation and a jerk here. It's like, this guy's just really good at playing a jerk. That some people are, I suppose.
Some people just have that pedigree, I suppose, yeah.
I guess they do.
All right, so Voyager goes into the Badlands. They're still looking for this missing Maquis ship. And right away, this mysterious energy wave comes back, and, well, we're whisked away. I think there's another cut to white or something like that. And
yes, the ship like flows towards the screen, and then you get kind of a white flash, and then we see the bridge and shambles, Janeway looking up, and now we see what we'll come to know as the Caretaker's Array firing energy down on Okampa.
Yeah, the Okampa homeworld. Yeah, and right after this incident has taken place, the chief engineer, the doctor, and the first officer are dead.
Yes. Oh, how did you feel about the original first officer, by the way?
Well, you know what? I didn't really care, because even back then when I first saw this, I knew he was going to die. So I was just waiting.
I've just always been curious how things would have been had these original actors been kept on the show in their roles. That's just something I've always wondered. Honestly, Chakotay is one of my favorite, if not my favorite, characters of Voyager, so I'm certainly happy that we did get him as the first officer, but this original first officer to me seemed very dull and bland just from the little bit of time that we got with him. I was just curious if you had the same feelings towards him as well.
Oh, yeah, he was, but, you know, I think that was intentional. You know, they didn't want you to get too attached to this guy.
Yeah.
Okay, so immediately Voyager is kind of in distress. Janeway runs down to the engine room. There's something going on with the magnetic constrictors or some kind of techno babble. And actually, in this kind of melee of camera shaking and whatnot, we're actually introduced to the hologram.
Initiate emergency medical holographic program. Please state the nature of the medical emergency.
Multiple percussive injuries.
Status of your doctor.
He's dead.
0.4 cc's of trianiline.
Trianiline?
We lost our nurse, too.
How soon are replacement medical personnel expected?
That could be a problem. We're pretty far away from replacements right now.
Tricorder? Medical tricorder.
A replacement must be requested as soon as possible. I am programmed only as a short-term emergency supplement to the medical team.
Well, we may be stuck with you for a while, Doc.
There's no need for concern. I am capable of treating any injury or disease. No concussion, you'll be fine. Clean him up.
The ship was more advanced than even the Enterprise D was, and had some new technologies, and this is one of those new technologies that will eventually come to learn more about the EMH and the person that created the EMH and new versions of the EMH. I always find those storylines interesting, but I thought the idea of having a medical supplement to assist was a great idea. I always wanted to see, rather, Dr. Crusher deal with one. I just I could just see, you know, Voyager's EMH dealing with Dr. Crusher and all the arguments they would get into, and I find that thought fascinating and very humorous.
I think, if I remember my trivia correctly, Robert Picardo actually wanted to audition for the role of Neelix. They insisted that he try out for the Doctor because he thought Neelix was going to be the standout character of the series. And we'll get to our thoughts on Neelix when we get to Neelix, but we haven't gotten to him yet in the show. But right now, as this is going on, actually the crew is transported away. And where do they end up? In a very weird place. Actually, it's something like a holodeck. They find out they're on the array, what they'll call the caretaker's array, in some type of rural setting in the south, like a farm, and the people there, or what they refer to as holograms at first, are actually acting very odd. They're not really answering their questions, and they end up having some kind of hootenatty or hoedown.
Yeah, it's a big... It's also, I guess, very funny to me, living in the south, and... You know, I often tend to make fun of Southern accents. I try my best not to use one because I just think that they just sound ridiculous to me. And so this scene is particularly amusing to me just because I've been around people that do talk like that and act like that. So that's just it brings extra humor to me. There are some people in the South that do behave that way.
Okay, so it's not just a cliche.
No, it's not. There are some Southern people that really are just hicks. They really do act like that. So.
Okay, well, they all set out on this little farm to try to find out what the heck is going on. They're all actually abducted from this and taken, guess what we see is kind of like an examination room or corridor where we see various crew members kind of like an alien abduction.
Yes.
And I thought, you know... Honestly, I hadn't seen Caretaker in a while, and I'd forgotten about this little scene, although it's not long. I thought it was kind of eerie or a little bit. What did you think?
Well, I definitely agree with you. I think in comparison to today's standards, I think it would probably be considered mild, but since this was 1995, that was probably pretty graphic for the time.
Oh, yeah.
You actually see them getting stuck with, like, this large needle and hear all this screaming and all that good stuff. So, for the time, that was probably a big deal to some people when it originally aired. And I definitely agree it is a kind of a creepy kind of a scene.
And then, like many alien abductions, people wake up and find out they have missing time. So, it turns out that they've been over on this array for 3 days.
Computer, how many crewmen are unaccounted for?
One, Ensign Harry Kim.
Hail the Maquis. Commander Chakotay, my name is Captain Catherine Janeway.
How do you know my name?
We were on a mission to find you when we were brought here by the Array. One of our crewmen is missing. Was he transported back to your ship by accident?
No. A member of our crew is missing too. Belana Torres, my engineer.
Commander, you and I have the same problem. I think it makes sense to try and solve it together, don't you? It's good to have you back, Mr. Tuvok.
I must inform you that I was assigned to infiltrate your crew, sir. I am Captain Janeway's chief of security.
Were you going to deliver us into their waiting hands, Vulcan?
My mission was to accumulate information on Maquis activities and then deliver you into their waiting hands. That is correct.
I see you had help.
It's good to see you too, Chakotay.
At least the Vulcan was doing his duty as a Starfleet officer, but you... You betrayed us for what? Freedom from prison? Latinum? What was your price this time?
You are speaking to a member of my crew. I expect you to treat him with the same respect as you would have me treat a member of yours.
How do you feel about this kind of opening scene between Harry and B'Elanna? I actually really like this scene because both this scene as well as a lot of other scenes of the episode really begin to start a lot of things that are going to be with us throughout the whole series. One of the things that I really love about this scene is the sarcasm between Harry and B'Elanna, but it's more like a friendly kind of sarcasm of, yes, consider yourself captured. Oh, I know I've got a phaser around here somewhere. And the whole, that's not funny, Starfleet. And I think that's funny because she actually refers to him as Starfleet throughout the whole series, I believe.
Well, I don't know about the whole series. I think she calls him Starfleet, at least for the first few episodes of this season. I'm not sure. But, yeah, I like their byplay when they woke up in that medical bay. It was, they're obviously on two different spectrums, on opposite ends of the spectrum.
What I always did find funny about Torres, though, is that, and I mean, even in the scene, you know, when she's beating on the door, fighting with the guards, it's like, yes, I understand that she's half Klingon, but I always thought that she was more aggressive than Worf was, and Worf was fully Klingon, so I just always thought that that was funny, that she was a little bit more aggressive.
Well, she had a really bad childhood, as we're going to find out later on. But,
oh, that's true, and I guess I do say that the Klingon females are usually more aggressive than the males anyway, so I suppose all that could explain away all those aspects.
And then we go back to the rave. Janeway goes back, and this is when we actually get to meet what will later be called Banjo Man. I don't remember what he said specifically, but he's a bit cryptic about why he's doing what he's doing.
Well, I believe it was they go to meet him, and he's basically saying that he just kind of was just waving his hands at him, saying, "No, you don't have what I need." And Janeway saying, "I don't know what you need. Frankly, I don't care. I just want our crew members back."
Okay, so they find out that these pulses that the array is shooting off is going to a planet. So they set course to go to this planet, which is the Okompan homeworld. They actually do talk a little bit about the atmosphere of this planet. Something's wrong. It's minus some type of particle, and they find that odd. On their way to this planet, they meet one of the other main characters in a debris field, and his name is Neelix. He's played by Ethan Phillips. I think any listeners we might have are wondering our thoughts on Neelix. Let me ask you, how do you feel about him?
I've given that a lot of thought, and I know that a lot of people hate Neelix. I know a lot of people think that he's very annoying and obnoxious, and they're right, he is. But the thing is that I think that Neelix is the person that gets on your nerves when you're watching him, but if you're actually in the same room with him, if this was actually a person that you're around regularly and you get to know, I think that he would actually be someone that you would grow very fond of, but he's just very obnoxious to sit and watch.
Yeah, I think I've heard him referred to as the Jar Jar Binks of Star Trek, I think.
Yeah, I think I've heard that before, too. I mean, there are a few really good Neelix episodes in the series, but he's definitely not one of my top favorite characters. He can be pretty annoying sometimes.
Okay, so we go back to the Okompan homeworld, and we're with Torres and Kim again.
What are they doing to us? What are these things growing on us?
Do you want them to sedate you again?
You're right, Starfleet.
It's a Klingon half of me. It's just, it's hard to control it sometimes.
What's your name, Maki?
Baylana. Baylana Torres.
I hope you're feeling better. I know how frightening all this must be for both of you. I've brought some clothes if you care to change.
Why are you holding us here?
You are not prisoners. In fact, we consider you honored guests. The caretaker has sent you to us. As long as you are not violent, you are free to leave your quarters. What's wrong with us? What are these things? We really don't know.
So we go back to Voyager after that, and I think this is going to be the first scene, which will be kind of a running friendship, as you mentioned, between Tuvok and Neelix. We find Neelix making himself very at home, as he's as they have agreed, as he's agreed to take them to this planet and show them around, kind of be their guide.
I really enjoy that scene. I think that it's just hilarious watching Tuvok's expressions of things like the Mr. Vulcan, good to meet you, and the perhaps you'd care for a bath, and just all that stuff. I think that that's very funny because it starts, really sets the stage for how their relationship will be pretty much throughout the rest of the series.
It was funny. I think a little comic relief was needed at this point. I mean, yeah, they do develop a kind of love-hate relationship, kind of similar to Odo and Quark in Deep Space Nine, although this friendship arc I didn't really enjoy as much as that one. But, yeah, they're setting it up right from the start. So I think they had an idea in mind as to where they were going with at least this part of the show. Let's see. They head off to this planet. They beam down to with Neelix. Janeway and the rest of her away team beam down with Neelix. And this is where we meet the Kazon, which are going to be a mainstay for the first couple of seasons. The planet itself is actually pretty barren. It looks to be kind of a desert world. As they mentioned previously, this planet has something with its atmosphere, missing some kind of particle in the atmosphere, so it's a very dry planet. This is why the Ocampa said they live underground. We see Cass. We're introduced to Cass. She's actually been captured by the Kazon.
This man led us here, suggesting we might find a people called the Ocampa. Do you know where they are?
Ocampa. She is Ocampa. Why would you be interested in such worthless creatures? They live only 9 years. They make poor servants. We caught her when she wandered to the surface.
To the surface? You mean they live underground?
The entity in space that gives them food and power also gives them sole access to the only water on this world, 2 miles below the surface.
This same entity has abducted 2 of our people. We believe they might be with the Ocampa.
There's no way to get to them. We tried. The entity has established some kind of subterranean barrier we cannot penetrate.
But she got out.
Occasionally, some of them do find their way to the surface. We don't know how. But the Ocampa sealed the tunnels afterwards.
Maybe she can help these good people find a way down.
You'd be wasting your time. I've used every method of persuasion I know to get her to help us. She won't.
Then she's worthless to you. Let us trade you water for this scrawny little thing.
I'd be more interested in acquiring this technology that allows you to create water from thin air.
That would be difficult. It's integrated into our ship's systems.
What do you think of the Kazon? Because they're going to be around for a while. So let me get your impressions on that.
I know there's actually a lot of fans that didn't like the Kazon, but I really enjoyed them. That's one of the reasons why I love the second season a lot, actually, is because I really enjoyed the Kazon. And in some ways, they kind of reminded me of the Klingons a little bit. But, I mean, they weren't exactly like the Klingons, but in some ways I thought they were a little bit similar. But I thought that they were really good villains. I kind of liked their ships, and I thought it was just interesting how they were always so fascinated with trying to steal technology. And in some ways, they're almost like a cross between the Klingons and the Borg. I mean, what was your take on them?
Honestly, I never really liked the Kazon, and I think the writers had a hard time with them as well. I don't think they ever really gelled. Their aesthetic was really off-putting. They always look dirty, and their ship design I never really liked the color schemes of it. I'm glad they dropped the Kazon, because I just found them kind of like space bikers. But we find out that Neelix has ulterior motives. He actually came down to rescue Cass. They had a relationship, I guess you could say. They kind of beam away in a rush, taking Cass with them.
I don't know if you noticed this, and it's more of just an observant kind of thing that I think is really funny. It's probably just a camera angle mistake, but when right when they beam back up to the ship at that point, after Neelix fires the phaser at the barrels of water and all this water's pouring out and all the Kazon are rushing towards it trying to fill up buckets of water, right when they're beaming up to the ship, in the lower right hand corner of the screen, you can actually see a faucet on the side of the barrel spraying water out.
Yeah, I didn't notice that.
Yeah, you go back and watch it again, you can see a small little faucet spraying water out. It's pretty funny.
Yeah, we Star Trek fans like to nitpick, so.
I nitpick more not because I want to point out what's wrong with it, but I just notice things and I find them amusing.
Yeah, you know, as you watch things over and over again, you can't help to do stuff like that, I understand.
Yeah, like what I had mentioned to you the other day about Tuvok's rank in the first season, that one makes me cringe. I don't know why. I'm for some reason I'm very nitpicky about rank. I don't know why.
Yeah, I never noticed that, but okay. All right, so we go back to Ensign Kim and B'Elanna Torres, And, of course, they don't like the fact that they've been abducted and that they've been probed, and they're trying to get out of this underground city. One of the Ocampan doctors actually helped them. She reveals that, yeah, there's tunnels or that are still open up to the surface. This is how Kes got there. So she helps them out and directs them. And on Voyager, Kes explains to Janeway that, yes, she came up through one of these caves or tunnels, and she asked Kes for help so they can go down to find Kim and Torres. So it's inevitable that, yes, they're going to run into each other.
What are your feelings on Kes as a character?
I guess you could kind of call her almost the Tasha Yar of this series.
I was actually thinking more of the Deanna Troi of the series, actually.
Well, and the fact that she leaves the series early. But I see what you mean. Yeah, Deanna Troi, sure. I like Kes just fine. The writers admitted that they never really got her character to work out. That's why they dropped her. I don't think that's the actress's fault. I think she did just fine. I think her name, Jennifer Leon is her name. I think she did just fine. They couldn't make her character work. I guess they tried to develop a relationship between her and a doctor. And I kind of liked it. I liked the dynamic that she and the doctor end up having. She kind of comes his assistant, and they develop a friendship.
Yeah, see, that was one thing that I guess I disagree on. I was never a Kes fan. Honestly, at this point in the series, I think that Kes is probably my least favorite character of the series. She just gets on my nerves. And I don't know, I think because she also makes Neelix more annoying, because after she's gone, Neelix gets less annoying. He gets a little bit more interesting as a character once she's gone, I felt.
They decide to go down and look for Kim and Torres. We pause for a moment. Torres and Kim, during their escape from the underground city of the Ocampa.
Don't let it beat you, Starfleet. Come on.
I'm sorry.
It's all right. We'll rest a minute.
Maybe I'd do better if I had a little Klingon blood in me.
Trust me, it's more trouble than it's worth.
You know, I spent my whole life getting ready for Starfleet. And on my very first mission, I'm gonna die.
We're not finished yet. I know a few things that old Sneezy didn't teach in his survival course.
Sneezy?
Commander Zakarian. Remember? You must have been allergic to everything.
You went to the academy.
Actually made it into the second year before we mutually agreed that it wasn't the place for me.
You know, I never really liked Zakarian.
Did Paris actually graduate? I can't remember.
I don't think so. I think that he made it into his second or third year, but I don't think that he actually made it all the way through.
Okay, so, yeah, just like him, she dropped out, joined the Maquis. Although her career in the Maquis, I guess, went a little better than his did.
Yeah. Well, see, that's kind of an interesting thing, too, because at this point, we really haven't seen all of that much of people going into Starfleet and not working out. We've really only seen that one time with Wesley Crusher. And so I thought that was interesting to actually have a ship full of people that some of them having tried to be in Starfleet and just couldn't cut it. And I thought that was an interesting thing to add to the series.
Janeway of Tuvok and the rest of the away team get to this underground city of the Ocampa. And Tuvok makes the summation that the caretaker is dying.
The array is the Ocampa's sole source of energy. Why would the caretaker seal the conduits?
He would seal them if he no longer intended to use them, to protect the Ocampa from their enemies. Captain, there is now enough evidence to form a reasonable hypothesis. I believe that the caretaker is dying.
Explain.
First, he increases the energy supply to provide the city with a surplus to last at least 5 years. Then he seals the conduits. The logical conclusion is that he does not intend to continue his role as caretaker.
That doesn't necessarily mean he's dying. He could be leaving.
Doubtful. Not after a millennium of providing for these people. I believe that the caretaker owes something to the Ocampa. I believe the debt that can never be repaid is very likely a debt to them. In addition, there were his frequent references to running out of time. I think he knew his death was imminent.
If he dies, how the hell are we supposed to get home?
Paris and Kes run into Torres and Kim. They make it to the surface, and Neelix and Paris actually end up going back to rescue Tuvok, Janeway, and Chakotay. I think Tuvok has, like, a broken leg.
I think that was Chakotay, though, wasn't it? On the stairs?
I think I can't remember. My notes got a little. My notes got kind of thin at this point.
That was Chakotay because Paris goes back for Chakotay. I don't think Tuvok was injured.
We kind of been introduced to the animosity, at least at first, between Chakotay and Paris, because Chakotay, of course, is not happy at all that Paris led them to find him. So they don't like each other, and they get into this kind of back and forth. And I think Paris says something like, "Oh, you owe me one."
Yeah. Well, pretty much at that point, Paris got Chakotay back to the ship, and at that point, they're in a battle with the Kazon. The Kazon are firing at them. They're trying to.
Yeah, the Kazon want control. The Kazon want the array for themselves.
Yes. And Janeway decides that she's not going to let them have it, basically. And this part of the episode really is mind-boggling for a lot of Trek fans, and this has actually been a debate that has been going on StarTrek.com somewhat recently.
Oh, really? Okay. What's the debate?
Whether or not she obeyed or disobeyed the Prime Directive in what she did here. See, some people think that she violated the Prime Directive by destroying the array, and some people feel that she obeyed it. So this has actually been a recent discussion on the website. So, I mean, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, honestly, I hadn't thought about it in terms of the Prime Directive. I thought of always this more as, this is what keeps them in the Delta Quadrant. You know, this is what's going to set up Voyager. And I always thought of it as kind of a plot hole in terms of a story. But Prime Directive, well, yeah, I think she, I guess she does violate the Prime Directive. She has to make a moral decision, of course. You know, she doesn't want the Kazon to get this array because they'll destroy the Ocampa.
This is one of the shades of gray I was referring to earlier, where she, and this is honestly why some people do have a problem with the character of Janeway. Some people feel that they could never really figure out exactly where she stood on things, because people sometimes say that her morals changed depending on the situation, and I don't know if that's necessarily true. I think that sometimes she was sometimes emotionally swayed. Sometimes, I mean, we'll see that much later on in the Equinox two-parter. But I think at this point it was more along the lines of kind of a split-second decision of, you know, these people are doing something wrong to these people. I'm gonna stop it.
So during this fight, Janeway goes over to the array to talk to the caretaker.
You're nothing if not persistent.
We need you to send us back where we came from.
That isn't possible. I've barely enough strength to complete my work.
You're sealing the conduits before you die.
Oh, if I don't, the Kazon will steal the water. But in a few years, when the compass energy runs out, it won't matter. They'll be forced to come to the surface, and they won't be able to survive.
Something you did turned their planet into a desert, didn't it? That was the debt that could never be repaid.
Well, we're explorers from another galaxy. But we had no idea that our technology would be so destructive to their atmosphere. Two of us were chosen to stay behind and care for them.
There's another like you here.
Oh. Not anymore. Oh, no, she went off to look for more interesting places.
Why were you bringing ships here, infecting people with a fatal illness?
Oh, they didn't die of an illness. They died because they were incompatible.
Incompatible?
I've been searching the galaxy for a compatible biomolecular pattern. Now, in some individuals, I found cellular structures that were similar, but I...
You've been trying to procreate?
I needed someone to replace me. Someone who'd understand the enormous responsibility of caring for the Ocampa. Only my offspring could do that.
Did you ever consider allowing the Ocampa to care for themselves?
They're children.
Children have to grow up. We're explorers, too. Most of the species we've encountered have overcome all kinds of adversity without a caretaker. It's the challenge of surviving on their own that helps them to evolve. Maybe your children will do better than you think.
So he dies, as he finds out that the turns into some kind of gemstone of some kind. As he finds out that the self-destruct mechanism was taken out by the Kazon, as the Kazon ship ran into the array. So the self-destruct isn't going to work anymore. How convenient. So Janeway has to make a moral decision. What was that?
I just said wonderful timing.
Uh-huh. So Janeway has to make a moral decision. Well, they can use the array to get back home. Or they can destroy it to save the Ocampa. Now, if they just use it to get back home, of course, the Kazon will capture it, abuse it, and this will destroy the Ocampa. So this is where a moral decision comes into play. And they decide to destroy it. And this is what's going to strand them in the Delta Quadrant. So they decide to destroy it and strand themselves.
Shall I activate the program to get us back?
And what happens to the Ocampa after we're gone?
Captain. Any action we take to protect the Ocampa would affect the balance of power in this system. The Prime Directive would seem to apply.
Would it? We never asked to be involved, Tuvok. But we are. We are.
So they load up some tri-cobalt devices and blow it up. They destroy the array. So now they're officially in the Delta Quadrant.
We're alone. In an uncharted part of the galaxy. We've already made some friends here. And some enemies. We have no idea of the dangers we're going to face. But one thing is clear. Both crews are going to have to work together if we're to survive. That's why Commander Chakotay and I have agreed that this should be one crew. A Starfleet crew. And as the only Starfleet vessel assigned to the Delta Quadrant, we'll continue to follow our directive. To seek out new worlds and explore space. But our primary goal is clear. Even at maximum speeds, it would take 75 years to reach the Federation. But I'm not willing to settle for that. There's another entity like the Caretaker out there somewhere who has the ability to get us there a lot faster. We'll be looking for her. And we'll be looking for wormholes, spatial rifts, or new technologies to help us. Somewhere along this journey, we'll find a way back. Mr. Paris? Set a course for home.
Or actually, I think this might be her final speech, essentially, of the episode of the "We're alone, we've already made some friends and some enemies, somewhere out there we'll find a way back," all that sort of thing. I really liked it. I thought it really set a good tone for what the rest of the series is going to be, and I thought it was a good end to the episode.
I guess it kind of leaves you hanging. I mean, it's kind of hard to look back and remember what I first thought. Since I never really liked the Kazon all that much, you know, when he says, "You've made some enemies here." I'm like, watching it now, I'm like, yeah, so what? You're not going to stay around that long anyway. So, it probably made me feel like a little bit of suspense when I first saw it. Like, ooh, a villain, a new villain. But, after that, we find out that Chakotay is going to be the first officer, and Neelix and Kes are going to be part of the crew, not just as passengers, but Neelix is very insistent that they can help out. And the rank is reassigned to Mr. Paris. He becomes lieutenant again. He becomes he takes over Khan, I believe.
Yes, that's right. He's the ship's pilot.
Yeah, the Betazoid that was, I think, piloting him over to the Voyager in the beginning of the episode. She died. So he's going to take her spot. So I think that pretty much wraps up the show, Caretaker, as a pilot. So I think it was a little disappointing that in this episode we didn't really go into at least the nitty-gritty at first of why she decided to pick Chakotay as her first officer. We kind of go into that later. Right now it kind of leaves us hanging. But go ahead.
That's actually one thing that I wanted to ask. Like at this point in the show, just for the sake of argument, just pretend that this is the only episode that we've seen at this point. You know, how would you feel about the idea of making a Maquis the first officer? Because I would imagine that, you know, when this first aired, that there was probably a lot of anticipation to see where that was going to go. Because, you know, like I said at the start of the show, at this point, if you watch the shows together, and I mean, I like to do that. I've got all the DVDs. I watch them all in the order that they aired. Like, I'll watch two series together, actually. And, you know, at this point, you know, if you've been watching Deep Space Nine, you can see that, you know, the Maquis are pretty dangerous. They like to go blowing things up. They like to go betray people and all that sort of thing. And which, I mean, we do eventually see some of that from later Maquis. But just out of curiosity, what are your thoughts about what could happen, you know, with her making a Maquis first officer?
I thought it was intriguing that they kind of introduced this dynamic to the show. Unfortunately, they really didn't end up doing much with it. They kind of dropped it, but I liked it. I thought it was intriguing, an interesting concept. I didn't really ever find it believable that she assigned Chakotay as her first officer. I don't think she would. I wouldn't do that in her shoes, but I'm not Janeway. But
I think that I could see myself eventually doing that if I got to know the person better, but at that point, she doesn't know
She doesn't even know this guy yet. I mean, he's an outlaw, so.
Yeah, I guess that part of it, I guess, would fall into the not so great, but I kind of didn't mind them eventually dropping the Maquis stuff, because, I mean, we do see a lot of that in Season 1 and in a little bit of Season 2, and to me it makes sense, because eventually it seems like, and since, you know, for the most part, one season takes place over the course of 1 year, so, I mean, by the time we're going into the third season, you know, they've all been on the ship together for 2 years at this point, and it did kind of make sense to me that the Maquis would pretty much give up their fight and just go along with it, because, I mean, what else are they going to do? And plus, their fight being with the Cardassians, not the Federation, it kind of made sense to me that everybody would just accept their situation and start working together, which they eventually start doing. So I was okay with that overall.
We're gonna go into our next segment now. We have segments. We're going to have segments on the show. At least we're going to try. Okay, this is our next segment. This is going to be our kind of episode recap. We're going to give our general overall opinions on on the episode as a whole. And we're going to give it a rating on a scale of 1 to 10. So, Benji, I'll let you go first. Give me your kind of recap overview and your rating, please.
Well, recap overview, this episode as a whole just pretty much sets up the premise of what this series is going to be. To give the series the most basic format of what it's really about. This is about people that are lost trying to get home. That's the most basic way to put it. And I would give the pilot episode, I'd say probably an 8 in comparison to the other pilots. I think that out of all the pilots, I think this one might either be my first or second favorite out of all the pilots. This was definitely one of the stronger pilots, I think.
Really? Okay. As the episode as a whole, looking back on it, as I said, I hadn't seen it in a while. I think it's decent. It does do a fair job setting up all the characters, the formats of the show. I didn't find myself really getting into it. The show started to kind of feel like homework as I was kind of taking notes on it. I kind of just wanted it to end.
Most people feel that way, both about Voyager and about this episode. I'm just weird.
Well, you know, hey, you're allowed to like it. I thought it was okay compared to the other series. It's not series openers. It's not one of my favorites. I think it's probably the least interesting opening, in my opinion. I think it ranks a little bit above Encounter at Farpoint from TNG. But I'd say on a scale of 1 to 10, I'd probably rate it 5. It's decent. Okay. It does its job, but I hardly ever go back to this episode. I hardly ever revisit it. Our next segment, this is what's going to be listener feedback. We don't have any listeners yet, as this is our first episode, but we're hoping that in the future we will have some listeners, and we're going to encourage you to drop us an email, and we'll read your email on the air, so to speak. Let us know what you think of our review or your thoughts on a particular episode, whatever you feel like talking about. We'll read from our online mailbox in cyberspace. And I don't have that email set up yet, but I will, and I'll leave it in the show notes. All right, so this is going to be a segment that I'm kind of calling off topic. This is just anything we feel like talking about for a few minutes that's unrelated to Star Trek. This is going to be about things we're watching or books we're reading or other podcasts we like to recommend, things of that nature. So how do you say, Benji, anything off topic you'd like to recommend or discuss?
Nothing really major comes to mind. I don't know if you've ever watched the series Lost before. A friend of mine recently got me into that series. Actually got me the complete box set of the whole series and Blu-ray as a wedding gift. I just finished that recently. That was pretty good. I would definitely recommend that to anybody who hasn't seen it. As far as books go, I'm actually reading some Star Trek books now, some of the Enterprise books that really picked up where Enterprise left off, and those have been really enjoyable, so I'd certainly recommend those.
All right. Sounds good. As for me, right now I'm reading a book. It's not a Star Trek book, but it's called A Mango Shaped Space. It's kind of a coming-of-age novel about a girl who has this affliction where she actually sees sights, sounds as actual color from her own viewpoint. It's interesting. I've heard of this affliction before. I can't remember exactly what it's called, but I've just started it. I've been enjoying it. I also just finished, for the first time, reading Catcher in the Rye. And I liked it. It definitely had a lot to live up to. It's a classic. It's like watching Casablanca for the first time. But I enjoyed it. I can see why it's stuck around all these years. I'm surprised there isn't a movie of it yet. In terms of podcasts, I've been listening to this really, really good podcast. I think it is. It's really funny to me. It's called Yeah, It's That Bad. And it's a movie review show. And what they do is they look at movies on Rotten Tomatoes and they find the movies that have a Rotten Tomato review. And they review it and decide whether or not that Rotten Tomato is deserved or not. It's pretty funny. If you like cinema cheese like I do, like if you can find the humor in movies like Battlefield Earth or The Adventures of Pluto Nash, you'll probably like this podcast. Also, I'd just like to mention a Star Trek podcast that I really like, which actually got me into thinking of making my own Star Trek podcast. It's called Trek No Logic. And they kind of review episodes at random of all the series. They're really funny, laid back. I definitely recommend checking them out.
Okay. Well, I would, of course, definitely love to recommend to anybody. You've got me interested in listening to the Gamma Quadrant show, which is, from what I understand, somewhat similar to this one, but just covering Deep Space Nine. And
yeah, they're exclusive to Deep Space Nine.
Mm-hmm. And Trek Companion, which is also covering DS9 right now. And, the first show that I listened to was Make It So. That show really got me wanting to eventually do a Star Trek podcast. And So over the years of listening to some of these other various shows, I've really enjoyed them, and they've definitely got me interested. So if anybody would like to go and give any of those shows a listen, they're all pretty good, and we'd love for you to listen to them as well as us. And I thank you, Josh, for including me in this. You've got some previous podcasting experience, and whereas this is my first time doing anything like this, so I definitely appreciate you including me on this project.
Yeah, you know, I think it's great that you you know, have an affection for Star Trek like I do. I'm glad you've joined me on this podcast. You know, like I said during our introduction, we've actually never met before. We've never spoken before until yesterday. So, and we're still kind of feeling this out. We're not really sure what this show is going to be like, but I think it's going to be fun as, you know, we get to know each other and as we talk about the Voyager episodes as we go. Yeah, you mentioned that I've podcasted before. That's true. I have another podcast going on right now. It's called The Soulless Minions of Orthodoxy, which any Trek fan with the salt will know that that's a reference from a Deep Space Nine episode. But in this podcast, primarily I do with my brother, we do fan commentaries on various movies. Actually, I just put out a podcast commentary for Galaxy Quest. That's available now, so you can check that out if you like commentaries.
I'm gonna have to check that out myself. I love Galaxy Quest. I kind of wish that they had actually used the original series crew for that film.
Mm-hmm. That would have been interesting.
That would have been incredible if they had done the exact same movie but had William Shatner and all the others, and that would have been awesome. I wish they had done that.
Yeah, also something else, I don't want to plug myself too much, but another podcast I thought I'd recommend that I really like, it's called Geek Fights. And it's a really fun show. Basically, the premise is they have a kind of a NCAA-style tournament, excuse me. They kind of pit differing things against each other. For instance, they'll have a panel, and the panel will all vote kind of in a versus match. For instance, they have I think an episode fully devoted to Star Trek versus Star Wars, and all the panelists will vote on, say, a versus match, say, Captain Kirk versus Darth Vader, who'd win, stuff like that. So it's really geeky stuff like that. It's a really fun show. I've actually participated recently in one of their geek fights. Their show isn't up yet, but it will be soon. But I've also done a few commentaries with them as well. But it's a really good show. They're really great guys. Really funny. But I think that pretty much wraps up our off-topic segment there, and I guess the episode as a whole.
Yeah,
this was really fun. This is our first episode. Like I said, I really don't know what we're doing yet, but be on the lookout for our web board. I'll leave that in the show notes. And like I said, you know, you can email us directly. I'll leave that as well in the show notes, as well as, you know, please like us on Facebook, tweet us on Twitter, or, you know, give us an iTunes review. Rate us. That helps us out. That helps get the word out. But until next time, until the next episode of Voyager, this is Josh signing off.
Benji signing off. Bye-bye.